While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On the Radar right here on Eagle FM. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and it's great to have you with me this Thursday afternoon as we get into the stories shaping our country and the wider world. Now, for the next hour and a half, I'll bring you the latest development, analysis, and perspectives on the issues that matter most to Namibians. Now, On the Radar is your trusted source for news and updates from Namibia and beyond, bringing you breaking developments, in-depth discussions, and the conversations driving our national agenda. Every day, decisions are being made that affect how we live, how we work, how we invest and grow as a nation. Now, from governance and economic developments to innovation, youth empowerment and private sector growth, we are here to unpack what's happening and why it matters. Now, through our live broadcast and digital platforms, On the Radar keeps you connected to real-time updates in politics, in business, in technology, in health and culture. So wherever you're listening from this Thursday, whether from Swakopmund, from Ketmanshop, Ochuarongo, Rundu, Tsumeb, or Katimamulilo, welcome to the conversation. This right here is On the Radar, where information meets insight and where Namibia stays informed. Let's get right into these discussions. At a stakeholder engagement on the sale of shares or interest and the transfer of mineral and petroleum licenses held at the headquarters of the Namibia Revenue Agency in Windhoek, the Commissioner of the Namibia Revenue Agency, also known as NAMRA, Sam Shivute, highlighted the agency's broader mandate that he said goes beyond revenue collection. He emphasized the role in facilitating trade and improving efficiency within the Namibia's customs environment. Now, addressing stakeholders, Shivute noted that over the past 4 years, the Revenue Authority has introduced several initiatives aimed at streamlining trade processes and supporting compliant businesses. Among these initiatives is the Authorized Economic Operator, also known as the AEO program, a customs accreditation system designed to recognize companies that demonstrate strong compliance with customs and trade regulations. Now, according to Shivute, only 10 companies so far in Namibia are currently registered as authorized economic operators, a figure he said the agency hopes will grow as more businesses become aware of the program's advantages. Now, companies accredited under the AEO, or also known as the Authorized Economic Operator Program, benefit from benefits such as the reduced customs interventions at border posts, including also fewer inspections and stoppages of goods at a border post, which helps speed up the movement of cargo across Namibia's borders. Now, in addition to that, accredited operators may receive exempted value or expedited value added tax processes, which include the possibility of operating for up to 3 years without routine customs audit, provided they maintain compliance standards. Now, these measures are intended to reward trustworthy traders while allowing customs authorities to focus inspections on higher risk shipments. Now, Shivute also stressed that the Namibia Revenue Agency undertakes several activities that go beyond traditional tax collection, and this include trade facilitation measures such as pre-clearance of goods, which allows cargo documentation to be processed before shipments arrive at border posts or ports of entry, helping thus to reduce delays and improve supply chain efficiency. Now, the engagement session formed part of ongoing efforts by the Revenue Agency to consult with stakeholders in the mining and petroleum sectors, particularly regarding regulatory processes related to the transfer of licenses and ownership interest, while also strengthening compliance and transparency within the sector. This article is sent to the Commissioner, Sam Shivute.
Joseph spoke about our vision of aspiring to become a world-class revenue agency. Part of our legal mandate, we have a responsibility to enhance trade facilitation. Last week, when we met as border agency to endorse the coordinated border management framework, someone in the meeting said, "Namra, you only focus on revenue collection." And when I got my opportunity to say something, I was quick to point out that, well, maybe that is the case, but it's not 100% true that our focus is only on revenue collection, because we have a responsibility to enhance trade facilitation. That's why any goods to be imported or exported in this country, it have to be declared and cleared, and if there's duty to be paid with NAMRA. But it's not only that. When one look at a number of initiatives that have been introduced over the past 4 years, I'll start with authorized economic operators, where we want to see more Namibian-owned companies participating as authorized economic operators. We only have 10. And imagine when you become an authorized economic operator, whereby when you are importing, your things do not get stopped at the borders. When there is a VAT due to you, it gets expedited. When you can go even up to 3 years without being subjected to an audit. And my wish is to see Namibian companies getting that accreditation, because it's not difficult. If other companies are getting it and we already have 10, I don't understand why are the Namibians not coming forward, especially those who import, to make sure that you get this authorized economic trader in the country. And you, with that benefit, you can operate in Eswatini, Lesotho, Botswana, in South Africa without subjected to many custom inspection and audit. That is one of the programs that we have introduced. You may have heard about one-stop border post, the pre-clearance, things to be pre-cleared before it comes into the country. I'm just sharing with this so that one can see that there is a lot that we are doing that have nothing to do with revenue collection, but it's aimed at making the environment, making to contribute to make Namibia more competitive. It's for that reason that we also have this gathering to share some of this critical information. So we want to enhance trade facilitation. I want to commend those who have decided to invest in Namibia, be it foreigners or Namibians, because with your investment, our economy will be in a better position to grow, and Namibia will be able to achieve prosperity. Without trade, trade is the engine of any economic growth, and therefore we want to commend you for that decision, whether you are foreign investor or a Namibian, because that is the way we can grow this economy. So we want to commend you on that. But we also have a responsibility to ensure that Namibia remain competitive, and that's why for investor confidence, predictability, those are very critical. I want you to know what is expected of you from a tax administration perspective. That's why we also have a service, a free service rendered by our legal department called the issuance of tax luring. If there is anything that you are not clear about or how a tax treatment will be done, you can write to us and you can get a tax luring, which is binding. It's only the higher court that can turn it away. But some people, and here is where my colleague in the auditing firms, sometimes they will not like me for saying this. You have a choice. You can go to an accounting firm and pay, or you can come and get it straight from us without paying, because our services are for free. And therefore, I just want to encourage that part of our responsibility, we have a responsibility to educate and share information. We have a responsibility to improve service delivery. Is our service where it's supposed to be? Definitely not. I'm facing people, some of them here, who are not happy with some of our service, and I'm happy that at least we know that there are those who are not happy, and that's why we have to work on those pain points and improve. But we have a responsibility to improve service delivery. I want also to bring to your attention In Namibia, the only state-owned enterprise that I know that is required by law to improve service delivery is NAMRA. Meaning that if we are not giving you the service that you want, we can even be taken on legally. It's in the law. Improve service delivery. No any other institution in this country where you will find that clause that say improve service delivery. And that commitment is there to improve that service delivery. Now, coming to why are we here today? You may be aware that Namibia have the self-assessment system as part of our taxation system. You may also be aware that 2011 and 2015, our Income Tax Act have this amendment to ensure that the disposals of shares and interest. First, 2011 was with regard to the mining sector, that when you have that right or that interest or share, and there is a transaction that is happening, they have to be declared and a tax have to be paid on that. Then 2015, it applied to, that is what was applied by the Q, paragraph Q under the Income Tax Act, section 1 of gross definition. Then 2015, the one that cover petroleum license kicked in. Now, I want to commend the industry. You've been there, Ms. Weston, as well. The industry was consulted very properly before the introduction of this law. Because what had happened before that, we had cases where shares and interest were disposed worth millions of dollars. And some here, we're not talking about millions of dollars, Namibian dollars. We're talking about worth U.S. millions of dollars. And the government of Namibia and the people of Namibia got zero from such transaction. I know of one that have cost more than 15 billion. And that with that, that imagine a transaction happening in a country for the resource of the country, more than 15 billion, and our government got zero. And that's why I have to commend the lawmaker who ensured that that law is changed. And I also want to commend the industry, because the industry was also saying that, no, this is right, because this is what is happening in all other countries. So I'm then saying that because this law came into effect 2011 and 2015 respectively, and I'm very happy that we are here, and the provision and the implication and the treatment will be explained by the expert as they will come on. What we want to encourage, if you forget everything that I have said, the one thing that you must remember is that we are calling for voluntary compliance. We want to build a NAMRA that is there to provide service and to work with a Namibian investor and Namibian business people, taxpayer, and so on. But voluntary compliance is what we want to encourage. Why do we want to encourage voluntary compliance? We have moved into a stage now where we are strengthening our compliance mechanism. We are working with the like of African Development Bank to develop the capacity of our auditors. Even last week, we're busy with that. Working with IMF to develop the capacity of our auditors. African Tax Administration is working with our colleague at Transfer Pricing. And it's through that strengthening of mechanism that we were even able to pick up one transaction that is more than 100 million US dollars. But now, because of this capacity, tax have to be paid on that, I'm just saying. And there are many of that, because from the data that we are having now, we're talking about maybe 250 licenses that have been traded during that period of about 10 years. And the compliance rate, as we are seeing, it's only 5% compliance rate. And the law is in place. That's why I say, no. Let's engage the stakeholders so that we tell them the truth, so that as the compliance mechanism is strengthened, what I do not like, there was one day someone I know come to say, well, I always argue and advise people, when you owe the state through taxes, make a payment arrangement and ensure that it's effective. And if you are not able to honor it that specific month, come to the office and tell the official, not the commissioner. The commissioner don't get involved or senior, and say, no, this month I could not honor it because of A, B, C, D. And therefore, but instead of, if you just stay away or you try to play big, what sometimes can be very painful is when a person comes and says, no, they take my 30 million. And it's happening. I say, man, I just wish voluntary compliance and just making sure that if you have a challenge, you have communicated, could be better. Because getting the money sometimes, there is a struggle. We are calling for working together, understanding that which you do not understand. Even we can even offer to come and discuss with your financial and your tax official and explain everything so that people know. And we need to do so that people know what is expected and so on, so that you do not find yourself in a situation whereby you have already disposed those share and the interest. You have made your millions, and maybe you have even already spent those millions and so on. And now the tax administrator come looking for its money because it does not prescribe. So I then wanted to conclude to say that voluntary compliance is very critical. Let's share and get a better understanding, and I'm happy that experts from the industry, they're going to talk. One of our top tax expert is going to talk, and there are many top accountant, Masaisab and so on, they are going to talk, top oil and gas lawyer, everyone is here, top business people who are in oil and gas, they are here. I want us to talk and have a collective understanding, but my humble call, voluntary compliance will help. Why? Come 31st of October 2026, the amnesty is going to come to an end. Now, you may have heard when the minister presented on the 26th of February, presented the budget, it was mentioned that the amnesty have been in place since 2017. You can do your study and your research. No country in the world have an amnesty of more than 6 years. The amnesty in Namibia have been in place since 2017. And you either have a tax administration, but you can't. And the disadvantage as a result of people not the way how it's affecting compliance. Because people are saying, why should I take my money to the state if I can put it in an investment account and so on? So no, you can do your own research. It's only in Namibia where you have an amnesty since 2017 until last year. And in Parliament, Narul Kambala, that announcement was made in Parliament. So October 2026, amnesty is coming to an end. Why I have to mention this? I'm mentioning this for people to make their proper arrangement, but because what you do not want a situation whereby the auditor then found that Ms. Magnai, my daughter, maybe you have interest, you sold, you disposed your share, you got your millions, you invested in other businesses and real estate, or you do not have the money, maybe you lost the money through whatever means. When the tax administration come looking for its money, there is no excuse. But you would want to do the right thing before the amnesty come to an end. So with that, once again, I want to welcome, even though you have already been welcomed, all of you, I want to express our heartfelt appreciation for you making time to be here, because I know some of you, you feel, I have to be there, but I'm also wasting time because I could have been making millions in US dollar. But I'm happy that you are humble enough to be here. I want to thank you for your patience, because the venue is not my perfect kind of venue. It will be the last. And this is not going to be the last time that we are engaging. Most of you are in different sectors. And we will continue engaging all different sectors. And today we just want to deal with mining.
Now let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. The stakeholder engagement will be dealing with mining this time around. And I think I get why also, because mining is quite at the hammer of the economy at this particular point in time. There's so many conversations around it. Whether we, how soon can we get this oil? What can Namibia do? Where is Namibia positioned at this particular point in time? There's so many discussions around that. So it's very necessary the stakeholders do come together to discuss what needs to be discussed, what policy reforms need to be done, what needs to be put on the table, perhaps also in manners whereby Namibian people can benefit, especially from the communities where the mining activity itself takes place. I've heard of communities where mining took place. Mining has been going on, and of course, this is raw material that is being exported to so many different countries out there, but then communities still no development, underdeveloped, and I think that would be very unfair, or is quite unfair for communities. Maybe such conversations include those type of discussions, and it's only very necessary, but whatsoever it is, it's good for collaboration and for stakeholders to come together, ask questions and address certain questions. And it's when such discussions are brought on the table that another company picks up on where it can prompt or can perhaps deliver services more proficiently, or perhaps enhance its skills, or perhaps lens of a project that they can undergo that will actually make the work even much more easier. So stake engagement such as this are quite very necessary. But nonetheless, let's pause right here. This is On the Radio News Analysis. We'll be back with more news. Stay tuned.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo teto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwa Fanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onora itatuimwe bali heali, nola natu, heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Namibia's annual inflation rate stood at 2.4% in February 2026. That is according to the latest consumer index, latest consumer price index and CPI bulletin released by the Namibia Statistics Agency. Now, the agency reported that the main contributors to the annual inflation rate were housing, water, electricity, gas, and other fuels, which contributed 1.2 percentage points, followed by alcoholic beverages and tobacco at 0.5 percentage points, and food and non-alcoholic beverages contributing 0.3 percentage points. Now, combined, these categories accounted for 2 percentage points of the overall 2.4 percentage inflation rate recorded during the month. Now, the highest annual inflation rates were recorded in hotels, in cafes, and restaurants at 4.8%, followed closely by housing, water and electricity, gas and other fuels at 4.7%, while health recorded a 4.0 percentage, recreation and culture at 3.9%, furnishings and household equipment at 3.5%, and alcoholic beverages and tobacco at 3.4%, all remaining consumer divisions recorded inflation rates below 3%. Now, housing-related costs remained the largest contributor to overall inflation, with the category accounting for 28.4% of the consumer basket and recording an annual inflation rate of 4.7% in February 2026. That is up from 3.7% in February 2025. Now, the increase was largely driven by higher prices in the electricity, gas and other fuels subcategory, which rose from 1.0% to 4.8%. Meanwhile, food and alcoholic beverages, which make up 16.5% of the NCPI basket, recorded a significantly lower annual inflation rate of 1.6% compared to 5.9% during the same period in 2025. Now, the slowdown was reflected in several food items, including bread, cereals, which recorded deflation of 1.5%, largely driven by declining prices for maize meal, rice, and bread. Food prices increased by 9.0%, though slower than the 14.3% recorded last year, while meat prices rose by 3.0%, down from 8.1% in February 2025. Inflation for vegetables also slowed to 1.7% compared to 5.7% in the previous year. Now, the transport category, which carries a 14.3% weight in the consumer basket, recorded a deflation of 1.0% compared to an inflation rate of 1.3% in February 2025. Now, the decline was mainly attributed to the operation of personal transport equipment, including a 5.6% decrease in petrol and diesel prices during the review period. Now, the non-alcoholic beverages and tobacco category, which accounts for 12.6% of the consumer basket, recorded an annual inflation rate of 3.4%, slightly lower than the 3.7% recorded in February 2025. Now, according to the statistics agency, the slower increase was driven by moderated price growth in products such as wine, brandy, and tobacco. Now, regionally, inflation trends differed across the country's three CPI zones. Zone 1, which includes regions such as Kavango East, Kavango West, Konene, Oanguena, and Oshana, recorded an annual inflation rate of 1.4%, down from 3.5% last year. Zone 2, covering the Commerce region only, recorded 3.5% inflation, while Zone 3, which includes regions such as Karas, Erongo, and Hardap, recorded 2.5%, also reflecting a slowdown compared to 3.7% in February of 2025. Now, the Namibia Statistics Agency noted that Namibia's inflation is largely driven by housing, by food, and transport, which together account for nearly 60% of the total consumer basket, while alcoholic beverages and tobacco represent an additional 12.6%. And as a result, price changes in these major categories tend to have the largest impact on the country's overall inflation rate.
The Namibia Statistics Agency has just released its latest Consumer Price Index Bulletin, that is for the month of February 2026, whereby the headline annual inflation rate stood at 2.4% compared to 3.6% recorded in February 2025. On a monthly basis, inflation stood at 0% from 0.8% observed in the preceding month. Core inflation stood at 3.2%, higher than the headline inflation rate. Looking at the zonal inflation rates, we see that the Comas region, which is zone 2, registered the highest annual inflation rate at 3.5%, followed by zone 3, which includes Karas, Erongo, Hartab, and Omaheke at 2.5%. Now zone 1, which is Kavango East, Kavango West, Kulene, Ohangwena, Omsati, Oshana, Oshkoto, Ochodonjupa, and Zambezi, recorded the lowest annual inflation rate at 1.4%. An analysis of average retail prices for selected products in February 2026 revealed that consumers in Zone 3 paid the highest price for beef stew per kg at $113.96, followed by Zone 1 at $108.99, while Zone 2 recorded the lowest price at $104.19. Additionally, Zone 3 paid the highest price, that is for sunflower cooking oil at 750 ml at $34.79, followed by Zone 2 at $33.99, while Zone 1 recorded the highest price at $32.78.
With that, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo doto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi to danjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
In other news, an information sharing session at the government information sharing center on government stores, a local manufacturers registration initiative was held today to brief local producers on opportunities to participate in government procurement through the country's government stores systems. Now, the initiative forms part of a broader effort by the government to increase procurement from local manufacturers, strengthening domestic industry and reducing reliance on imported goods. Now, isn't this good news? Because this is a part of what we normally, I would want to say, preach here on Eagle FM, especially when you're talking about strengthening our local businesses and reducing imports and rather increasing exports, and also just making use. If we're not going to increase the exports soonest, or we're not going to get there in a very short period of time, let's at least ensure that we produce from our own. Let's ensure that we have local manufacturers, local produce, and we consume that. You know, that on its own will help reduce the imports, and with time, as we produce more, we'll now be able to export. Now, government stores operate as part of the state's centralized procurement and supply chain systems, which purchases commonly used goods in bulk and distributes them to ministries, to offices and agencies across the country. Through this system, government aims to standardize procurement processes, improve efficiency, and ensure better oversight of public spending. The Local Manufacturers Registration Initiative seeks to create a database for of Namibian manufacturers and suppliers who can provide goods required by government institutions. Now, by registering with government stores, local manufacturers can become eligible suppliers for products ranging from office furniture and equipment to uniforms, construction materials, and other consumables used by the public institutions. Interestingly, other countries within, perhaps by local, I wanted to mean within even around SADC, some of those countries, you hear that they make their own furniture, they do their own stuff, and yeah, it's not always that we have to ship everything from across the borders. So even things such as pencils, such as, yeah, stationery that is used in government offices, are things that we can actually manufacture right here at home. But I believe that we're definitely getting there. We are definitely getting there. Namibia is getting there. Now, local manufacturers, the initiative also aligns with government's broader local procurement agenda, which encourages ministries and state institutions to prioritize locally produced goods where available. Now, government leaders have previously emphasized that ministries should purchase locally manufactured products first before considering importing them. As part of efforts to support domestic industries and stimulate job creation. And not only that, also so as an effort to as well identify where improvement needs to be improved and that can be worked on before actually exporting them so that we don't get the critics from outsiders and they wouldn't want to do business with us again. But rather, let's receive the criticism right here at home and then be able to rectify it and then be able to export. Now, also speaking at the GICIM, one of the guests speaking at the Government Information Sharing Center, spoke about the registration initiative is intended to bridge the gap between government demand and local production capacity, while also helping manufacturers understand procurement requirements such as product standards, quality compliance, packaging, and supply reliability. By improving access to government markets, the programs aim to provide stable demand for local producers, which could support business expansion and industrial development. Now, the management session further provided an opportunity to discuss on registration procedures, compliance requirements, and procurement processes. Let's now take a listen to Ms. Camp from the Ministry of Works. Let's take a listen to Ms. Camp as she spoke, and also Ms. Agnes Shopala as they were speaking at the event, at the GIC event.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Firstly, we would want to inform the public that the government stores is actually a subdivision within the division centralized services, mm-hmm. which also for under the division, we also have auction services as well as stock provisioning, which also now covers government stores. The mandate of the government stores is the central acquisition, storage and distribution of standard government supplies to all offices, ministries, agencies, state-owned enterprises, local authorities, and regional councils. Mm-hmm. And we procure centrally to ensure that there is consistent and quality supplies, mm-hmm. always readily available.
Phew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey, the taxi's empty. So much room. Oh no, why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the Mimo with the big bag too.
Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life, you just get squeezed. But luckily, with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
Always readily available. And by doing so, we benefit in terms of economies of scale. Mm-hmm. So that is the government stores in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Campbell, when you say you procure centrally, what does that mean?
What it means is the government stores actually look at the demands of all OMAS, mm-hmm. and then we subsequently advertise bids, of which we award them, mm-hmm. and then we stock the supplies. So whenever office, ministry, agency, or state-owned enterprise is in need of these standard items, they will then visit the government stores, mm-hmm. and they will then procure these items from us and not procure it from outside.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that through auction? Or?
No. As I said, there's two subdivisions within the division centralized services. We've got the stock provisioning under which the government stores falls.
Okay.
And then we've got another leg, which is the auctioning.
Okay.
But then with the auctioning, what we do at the auctioning subdivision is that we conduct auctions of obsolete, redundant, worn and damaged items. To the public on behalf of other ministries, offices, and agencies. Mm-hmm. So that is separate from the government stores per se. When it comes to auctions, we do advertise in the newspapers whenever we have an auction. These auctions are conducted throughout the country, mm-hmm. and we would advertise, and it is advertised for the public. So anyone that's interested in bidding mm-hmm. for those items on auction can then go to the auction, register themselves. There's usually a registration fee involved, mm-hmm. and then they can bid. And then the highest offer would then be awarded that bid in terms of that specific item, be it vehicles, be it equipment, be it furniture.
Government store ensure that our product is accessible to all OMAS by where we have that. We have six government store countrywide, starting in government store in Windhoek, which is a central of government store and the mm-hmm. head office of government store. Windhoek is saving or three region, which is Commerce region, or Maheke region, and the part of Hardap region. Mm-hmm. We have also a government store at the Kate Manso, which is serving Maras region and the part of Hardap region again.
Okay.
Then we have another government store at the Ochivarongo. Ochivarongo is serving Ochozonjupa, Erongo, in the Kunene region. Mm-hmm. We have another government store at Ondangwa. Ondangwa is saving Omusati, mm-hmm. Oshana, Ohangwena, and Oshikoto. We have another government store at Rundu, mm-hmm. which is saving two Kabango, Kabango East and Kabango West. Mm-hmm. And the last one at Katima Muliro. The Katima Muliro is saving the whole entire Zambezi region. Mm-hmm. Then we think everybody is covered. You can go where it's nearby government store. Government store, we have a system when we are issuing our stock to our customers. Then when you come to us, like, let me say it's embassy, mm-hmm. you're given a code which is allow you to be in our system. Mm-hmm. Then since you are from the embassy, you are not from OMAS, we will buy on cash sale.
Oh.
You just identify the item which you want from government store. Then we create an order for you. Mm-hmm. We print you invoice. You go and pay. Once you pay, we issue your stock.
In July 2025, mm-hmm. Cabinet issued a directive instructing all OMAS to procure from the central government stores. Mm-hmm. And also instructing the Ministry of Works, under which we reside, that the government stores should procure, should prioritize local manufacturers, procuring from local manufacturers. Mm-hmm. That is in line with the agenda of Namibia's industrialization and job creation agenda of NDP6. And subsequently, the Ministry of Works, the government stores, advertised an expression of interest mm-hmm. in December last year, mm-hmm. Where companies, manufacturers were requested to come and register themselves on an eligibility list for them to be considered for preferential procurement processes mm-hmm. In terms of restrictive bidding. That it was done in terms of the Public Procurement Act, mm-hmm. Section 31(1)(c), and the Public Procurement Regulations, mm-hmm. Section 14(1). Mm-hmm. The main objective of this expression of interest was actually for us to create a manufacturer's database and also for us to establish what is the country's manufacturing capability.
Yes.
And in by doing so, we would then be able to identify those items within our catalogs, the standard items that we are supplying to OMAS, mm-hmm. that we should reserve specifically for the preferential procurement process mm-hmm. in terms of local manufacturing.
Okay.
That is basically what this expression of interest is for then.
Government stores procure plus minus 11,000 items. Mm-hmm. I will not mention them all,
okay.
But we have different of warehouses at the government store. We have is named by section. Section 1 is for cleaning material, where you find all hygiene product. Mm-hmm. It's also where we are selling toilet paper. We have also section 03 to 08, mm-hmm. where is our hardware. It's for the gardens, mm-hmm. panga, wheelbarrow, and also battery and everything you can use it in the garden. Mm-hmm. We have also 09, it's a furniture section. This section can sell furniture for the office, furniture for school like a chair, desk, table. Then we have section 12. 12 is for uniform. Mm-hmm. And we have 13 is also for household where you find broom, mop, mm-hmm. trolley, and everything you can use it. We have also section 14 for education material, mm-hmm. where you find pen, pencil, for school, whatever our kids are using at okay. school. Mm-hmm. Then we have also section 15 is for official document and the face value. Mm-hmm. Face value, we are also talking like receipt book. Receipt you get when you go to hospital mm-hmm. is from government store.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And also receipt when you pay fine at the police or you go to for your child-based face certificate, home affairs. Mm-hmm. Those are face value from government store.
As we speak, the government store currently manages 13 procurement contracts, mm-hmm. of which 9 have already been awarded prior to the directive mm-hmm. from cabinet. These contracts that were awarded, the 9, are due to expire during the 27-28 financial year. Mm-hmm. Our procurement opportunities are primarily advertised through the government e-portal, e-procurement portal, where suppliers can access bid documents and submit proposals. Mm-hmm. In urgent situations, we do request for quotations, mm-hmm. which is also issued through the same portal okay. to speed up the procurement process. Mm-hmm. Most of our procurement process, as we speak, are restricted to small and medium enterprises, mm-hmm. our SMEs, mm-hmm. in line with government policy, except now where items may be reserved specifically for local manufacturers.
Okay.
Suppliers are therefore encouraged to always regularly monitor the e-procurement portal for new bidding opportunities. Mm-hmm. As outlined in the expression of interest, manufacturers interested to be included in the eligibility list, or we can also call it the manufacturer's database, must submit documents to the central government stores. Mm-hmm. This, it's like a proposal that you will be submitting. This should include a cover letter, company profile. What should be contained in the company profile should be information like background, history of the company, mm-hmm. The key personnel, that you like your structure.
Yes, yes.
How your operations are, mm-hmm. key personnel involved within your manufacturing plant, their qualifications, because mm-hmm. we would want to know if you are manufacturing, let's say, cleaning material, mm-hmm. do you have the necessary skill, the necessary knowledge to ensure that your product that you are manufacturing can be utilized okay. for human mm-hmm. utilization. Another aspect, then basically they need to submit the normal mandatory documents that is usually required in terms of bidding mm-hmm. for government. That's your copy of your affirmative action, copy of your SME registration, copy of your social security, mm-hmm. your NAMRA. In addition to that, they also need to provide us with a fitness certificate mm-hmm. Because we'll need to go and assess if it is the truth, whether there is such a manufacturer that at that exists. Premises. Mm-hmm. In the absence of a fitness certificate, a valid agreement, lease agreement mm-hmm. will also suffice. Mm-hmm. And then what they also need to do, they need to submit with the proposal and evidence of previous contracts.
Okay.
Where they will indicate what was the value thereof, who was the company that they had supplied mm-hmm. and the duration thereof. And also attach a brochure.
Oh.
For the items that they are manufacturing. Mm-hmm. Once they've got all this information together, the proposal is prim and proper, they can then submit it at the central government stores. At this stage, with the pre-registration, there's basically no disqualification criteria. Mm-hmm. For us, it's first to look at, as I said, we want to assess the manufacturers' capability of the country. So once we've registered them, there would be a site inspection mm-hmm. to verify indeed if there is such operations as they are claiming happening at the site which they indicated. And once we've affirmed that, we will then come and they will now be informed to say you've made it mm-hmm. or you haven't made it, because we also need to know that it's not a thing of if you are on the list, you automatically. Mm-hmm. As I said, the preferential procurement will be towards local manufacturers, but these manufacturers will also now be required to bid against each other.
Yes.
But that will only be in terms of a restrictive bidding exercise. Mm-hmm. Restrictive bidding. And when it comes to the restrictive bidding, they will be called, and in terms of all bidding documents, they will then be required mm-hmm. to submit this documentation, and it's only thereafter.
And now let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned for news beyond the borders of Namibia.
Efilo shisho, otali kulandula kona vewayuka. Ekwashili palekolo maruendo paiwano kupitila mo NHB. O atupatele komesho kwashili palekolo afika mafio pedola emiliona omlongo da Namibia. Moshi joshe tukeshe kuyanja omakwafo unamiti enashane filo shisholo paulumo mumbu. Kwa voveli ponje yoshilongo, shijoshi topo washo ijo yetu, tashiningwa inapawe banando ishoshe layash. Opo umone ya kulolo polis maule ominute dishona elela, lishangifako nhp.com.na omanga ino ya moruendo ponje yoshilongo. E mangono malandula fano, odo dino kulandurwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the R.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa ninge kwa Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honore Tatuime, Bari Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bari, No Heali, Ileko, Berewa, Nora Hetatu, Natu, Bari, O Hetatu, Batatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, The Eye.
Welcome back, and now for news beyond the borders of Namibia. Let's start off in South Africa as Finance Minister tables the 2026 provisional budget for South Africa.
And the same care. In total, we are making provisions for 2.842 billion rand in reserves over the 2026 MTF, of which we will have set aside 1.346 billion rand for our unforeseen and unavoidable reserve, 707.503 million rand for our stabilization reserve, and 269.18 million rand for acquisition of property reserve to deal with the impacts of climate impacts, protect essential services in the face of national fiscal constraints, and support infrastructure as projects accelerate. Speaker, a herd reflects the discipline of the farmer who tends it. Good farmers do not lose discipline in good seasons. They prepare for the seasons that will surely come. In that spirit, I wish to announce that in line with long-term planning, the Western Cape government has approved the establishment of the Alternative and Blended Financing Reserve aligned with our 2025 policy framework and funded in part through over-collection on motor vehicle license fees. This 518.814 million rand reserve will be dedicated exclusively to servicing borrowings for infrastructure and related projects, strengthening capacity to manage strategic development, reinforce fiscal resilience, and help scale our infrastructure portfolio. So just as a farmer must balance the growth of the herd with the health of the pasture, government must balance growth with discipline and care. Continuing this values as a government, the Western Cape acted swiftly during the 2026 budget process to respond to emergencies and disasters affecting our communities. We are drawing down from our unforeseen and unavoidable reserve alongside existing departmental budgets over the MTF to support and scale our disaster response and strengthen resilience across our province. The 2026 budget will thus respond with 949.8 million rand in provincial funding for unforeseen and unavoidable events. This includes 177.942 million rand for water resilience and drought response, including groundwater augmentation, bulk raw water supply and alien vegetation removal, 452.529 million rand for energy resilience, including solar installations for schools, clinics, emergency services, and farm worker homes, 139.7 million rand to combat foot and mouth disease, for vaccines and scaling our veterinary capacity to protect our dairy and meat industries. 67 million
Meanwhile, a suspected gas leak at a school in Wentworth in Durban, where learners are receiving medical attention following that suspected gas leak. Let's take a listen to that one.
8 learners have been rushed to nearby hospitals for further treatment following a suspected gas leak at a school in Wentworth, south of Durban. Several learners were treated on site for gas inhalation after a pungent odor reportedly swept through the school grounds. Private emergency services treated...
Watching News at Prime, let's bring you this now.
8 learners have been rushed to nearby hospitals for further treatment following a suspected gas leak at a school in Wentworth, south of Durban. Several learners were treated on site for gas inhalation after a pungent odor reportedly swept through the school grounds. Private emergency services treated scores of students on the scene for respiratory distress and dizziness. The school has been officially closed for the day and evacuated as a precautionary measure. Earlier, we spoke to SABC News reporter Nontlaganipho Magwaza, who's in Wentworth in Durban.
There was a leak. They're not sure as yet where the leak came from, but it was exacerbated by the strong wind. And he said that when they received the call, it was because of learners experiencing difficulty in breathing. And one of them actually had a seizure. And together with EMS paramedics, they rushed about 8 children to local hospitals and private hospitals. We did have the opportunity to speak to a community member who also was here earlier to assist when he heard what happened. He said that when he got here, he could smell the acrid smell of whatever that was, whether it or not it was gas or chemical leak that happened. And they tried to evacuate all the learners from the school. As you can see, some of them are waiting for their transport. When we got here, parents were also lined up to fetch their kids or children back home because they were scared. You could see some of them were panicking because they don't know exactly what transpired. However, we do have a member of the community as well as a mother of one of the children who was also affected here at the school. Miss Anita, she'll tell us what exactly happened. Was your son affected, badly affected? I do understand that he has a cardiac a problem.
Yes, he does. He wasn't affected really, but he did panic when he realized what could happen, and that's when I decided to go and fetch him when I heard about this leak, that the children were starting to faint. Yes.
And you are a member of the community in this area, and one of the members that we spoke to, he said that this is not the first time this has happened.
No, it's not. It's happened before, plenty times before. And it's always a case of someone's getting rushed to hospital because of the leaks. And so children, especially the children, you know, those that are suffering with chest problems, asthma, heart conditions and all that, they're always the ones that are getting rushed to hospital first.
You experienced the smell firsthand. If you can just describe it to us, because we got here too late, we couldn't smell, but we do have that scratchy feeling at the back of our throats. If you can just explain how that smell was.
A sharp smell of nail polish remover or acetone. Yeah. That's what it smelled like.
Were you not affected?
My nose and my eyes were burning. Yeah.
As a community member, I know you've had this kind of problem before. There have been protests, numerous protests about the factories around this area and the air pollution in this area. What would you want to happen?
Well, first of all, is they need to train the people properly with regards to safety and all that. There shouldn't be accidents happening, although we understand accidents do happen, but I mean, once or twice is an accident, and more than that, it's just plain negligence on their part. So they should train proper safety officers for these types of things so that it's to prevent it from happening, because I mean, the children's health are at risk because of it. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
That was one of the community members and also a parent of one of the grade 8 learners here at the school, saying that she also rushed in to check up on her son and to take her son back home. And she is saying that this is not the first time. It is a recurring thing. And they are pleading with the companies, with government, whoever is listening, to please assist them in this situation that they are faced with, because they have now developed respiratory illnesses or problems because of the air pollution in this area.
Still in South Africa, NDPP is set to brief on NPA strategic direction and priorities.
There's plenty on the go this Thursday, because the newly minted National Director of Public Prosecutions is expected to outline the NPA's strategic direction and priorities today. In fact, this will be Advocate Andrew Mutibi's first such engagement,
and finally,
since he took up the reins as the leader of this institution. He's expected to outline plans to strengthen prosecutions and intensify the fight against crime and corruption. To get you a sense of what else we know about this, with SABC News reporter Ofensa Sidimo live to us now from the country's capital ahead of that briefing at 10 o'clock today. And Ofensa, the new head of the NPA is really spoiled for choice about where to begin.
Absolutely. There is a myriad of issues that Advocate Andy Mutibi rather would have to grapple with. As you can remember, we've been following the Ngabinde inquiry quite closely, and there were accusations that were leveled against the NPA there that there was some dereliction of duty, and in fact also at the TRC commission where they're investigating the apartheid crimes. There has been some accusations at the NPA to say that, you know, they have not been effective in ensuring that they prosecute these particular crimes. And just to give you a background, the NPA was actually established in 1998 using Section 179 of the South African Constitution and the NPA Act of 1998. And ever since then, including the incumbent, we've had about six NDPPs, that is the National Directors of Public Prosecutions. And to a certain extent, everybody knows the criticism that has been leveled against the NPA in terms of turning around cases emanating from the State Capture Commission, some of which we've seen, you know, the extradition of the Gupta brothers in the UAE actually fell flat. And there are also other issues of which, you know, put the NPA on the side of the criticism of the public, actually saying that they have not been effective. You can remember also the Omotoso trial, which after many years of proceedings, he was actually acquitted. And the blame was laid squarely on some of the prosecutors. So today we're actually expecting to hear a briefing by Advocate Andy Mutibi as to how he will actually grapple with some of these challenges that have been there at the NPA, and to ensure that, you know, he actually turns things around. They also mentioned the strategy, I believe it's called the quick win strategy. So we will hear what this particular strategy is all about, what it actually means, and how he's actually going to deal with ensuring that the image of the NPA is turned around. And already we know that he's actually not going to serve his full term as an NDPP, because already he's close to the retirement age. He's only going to serve about 2 years. So it would be prudent for us to ask as to some of these myriad of issues that the NPA has faced over the years, will he be able to sort of turn things around within that particular short tenure of which he will be at the helm of the NPA? Proceedings are expected to start at 10 today, and we will hear some of the plans they have for this particular agent, which is responsible for public prosecutions on behalf of the South African government.
Yeah, no overstating the importance.
Meanwhile, Kenya's Sashai retains to defend WRC Safari Lorry title.
Nikhil Sachania is no ordinary rally driver. After a quad bike practice accident at the age of 22 that left him paralyzed from the waist down, Sachania's life and outlook changed forever, but his thrill for motorsport did not falter.
I want to say 14 years ago, or 13 years ago, I had a quad biking accident in Athi River, where we were doing a training rally. So I fell in such a way where I cut my spine, so I'm paralyzed from the waist below. It took me about 6 months of rehabilitation to to get back into then daily life. And about a year and a half, I then restarted my journey into motorsports.
Ever since his return to rallying, the 36-year-old has been growing from strength to strength, with 2025 being his best year when he managed to bag third place in the Africa Rally Championship, as well as winning the WRC 3 class of the WRC Safari Rally.
We had a good start to the year. We obviously took part in the WRC, which was also the first round of the ARC. In that event, we managed to come first in the WRC 3 category, essentially winning the Safari in that class. And for the ARC, we finished, of course, in ARC 3, we finished first. And overall ARC, we finished, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was fourth or fifth.
This year, Sachania comes with the same belief and spirit of defending his WRC 3 title at the Safari Rally as he pushes his limit in the Africa Rally Championship as well.
But obviously our main aim is to finish all the rallies and enjoy ourselves, especially the Safari. You know, it's a very long rally, very technical, very difficult. So it's more about having fun and bring the car home with, you know, minute damages or whatever we can.
Nikhil Sachania's story is one of inspiration that no human is limited. And this year he will be out in the wild and unpredictability of the Safari Rally, trying to repeat a feat that no other paraplegic driver has managed, winning the WRC 3 class of the Safari Rally and mounting a challenge for the African Rally Championship title.
Meanwhile, Zambia Railways Limited has signed a 20 million agreement.
Zambia Railways Limited has signed a 20 million United States dollars agreement to refurbish 6 high-powered locomotives in a move aimed at strengthening the country's rail system and supporting regional trade. The agreement, signed with Worldwide Rail and Mining Solutions, will see the rehabilitation, rebuild and upgrade of 6 GT3600 horsepower mainline locomotives at the Zambia Railways main workshop right in Kabwe Central Province. The project forms part of a wider effort by the government of the Republic of Zambia to revive railway transport so that Zambia can move larger volumes of goods more efficiently within the country and across the region. The rehabilitation program will be implemented in phases throughout 2026. The first 2 locomotives are expected to return to service between May and June, another 2 in August, and the final 2 between November and December. Once operational, each locomotive is expected to haul about 43,300 tons of freight per month, significantly increasing Zambia's rail transport capacity. The deal is structured under a vendor-financed arrangement, meaning Zambia Railway will not pay the full amount upfront. Instead, the $20 million investment will be repaid gradually using revenue generated from the locomotives once they return to service. President Hakainde Hichilema is firm on the importance of strengthening the regional trade links and adding value to Africa's resources through improved infrastructure and industrial development. Zambia Railways has in recent years faced challenges with locomotive availability, forcing the company to rely on hired locomotives to meet freight demand for both locally and across borders. Refurbishing the 6 locomotives is expected to reduce those costs while strengthening the company's ability to transport goods for key sectors such as mining, agriculture, manufacturing, and energy. The project also includes skills transfer with 15 Zambia Railways engineers and technicians expected to participate directly in the rehabilitation process in order to strengthen local technical capacity. This latest investment comes in addition to other funding already directed toward the revitalization of Zambia's railway system. Remember, in 2025, government injected 100 million kwacha, roughly 4 million United States dollars, into Zambia Railways to support recapitalization efforts, including track maintenance, signaling improvements and rolling stock rehabilitation. At the same time, the European Union has committed about 50 million euros, approximately 55 million United States dollars, toward the rehabilitation of sections of the main railway line between Livingstone and Indola, including modernization of signaling and telecommunications system. Overall, Zambia Railways' medium-term recovery plan covering the 2024 to 2028 period is estimated to require about 248 million United States dollars in total investment to modernize infrastructure, expand freight capacity, and improve operational efficiency. The locomotive rehabilitation program is therefore one component of a broader national strategy to restore rail as a reliable and cost-effective mode of transport. Beyond Zambia Railways itself, the country is also benefiting from major regional rail investment. These include the 1.4 billion United States dollars rehabilitation of the Tazara Railway, which connects Zambia to the Tanzania port of Dar es Salaam, and the development of the Lobito Corridor, supported by the international partners, which links Zambia and the Democratic Republic of Congo to the Angolan port of Lobito on the Atlantic Ocean. Now, together with existing routes along the North-South Corridor toward South Africa and the links to ports in Mozambique, these projects position Zambia as a key transport hub connecting regional markets. Improving railway capacity allows Zambia to move larger volumes of minerals, agricultural produce, and manufactured goods are more efficiently across borders while reducing pressure on road networks. It also supports the broader goal of expanding intra-African trade, particularly under the African Continental Free Trade Area, which aims to increase trade between African countries. Government says revitalizing the railway network will reduce transportation costs, improve logistics for exporters and importers, and help integrate Zambia's more closely into regional supply chains. In practical terms, investments such as the 20 million United States dollars locomotive rehabilitation program represents part of a larger effort to transform Zambia from landlocked country into land-linked regional trade hub, enabling goods to move more efficiently between neighboring countries and global markets while supporting economic growth at home.
Meanwhile, Stabic East Africa reports flat earnings amid rate cuts.
Standard Bank's East African unit reported relatively flat earnings at $106.4 million for 2025 in a year of aggressive interest rate cuts from Kenya's central bank. The firm's loans to clients, however, those went up by double digits, 18.6% to $2.1 billion. Deposits grew by a comparable margin, up 17.5% to $2.9 billion US dollars. Despite both the rate cuts from the central bank and a transition to a new industry-wide loan pricing system, the bank reported a marginal decline in net interest income, down 1% to $186.7 million. Non-interest income fell by 6% to $111.9 million. Now, Stanbic's parent company was in long-running talks to acquire Kenya's third-largest bank by assets, NCBA. Those talks, however, were scuttled at the last minute when Nedbank, one of South Africa's big four banks, emerged as the preferred buyer, paying $846 million in a stock and cash deal in January. So with Stanbic paying out one of its highest dividends in years, I asked the CEO if that implies that acquisitions for the company are off the table.
No. This is absolutely far from the fact. And I like that you asked that question. So let me just explain two items. So one, the way we look at our growth as an organization, what is really our strategic levers to grow? So we have three of them that we have always driven in the last many years. One is organically building a strong momentum on our balance sheet. So achieving a double-digit growth in our asset growth, liabilities growth, and overall balance sheet growth. That's one aspect. The second one is to be able to find a knock-on investment in inorganic activity for a right fit, which aligns with our own strategy with the right price. That remains a core priority for us. And third one is partnerships. So whether we are working with our large partners like Safaricom, we are working with people like Road Sports to build something collectively together, that is valuable for us. So it's those three. So we've done extremely well on organic, and you can see that from the results we've announced. We haven't yet delivered the inorganic about the investment we want to make. But this is the point. We continue looking for opportunities. When they fit the organization in terms of the culture and the strategy, and they come to fit in where we are going as a group, their investment happens then. So we are always on the lookout. And this investment is not a Stanbic Holdings investment. Correct? This is a group investment. So nothing stops us today. If we have an opportunity that arises in the market here that fits our own strategy, actually, if that was to arrive from any day, I can assure you that we will be able to make the move will happen.
So what happened with NCBA?
So I can tell you about our investment, what we see. So it's a group that makes the investment, right? Now, if you ask me about the dividend, I want to finalize by saying the dividends, you have to look at the dividend strategy and investment strategy as two different legs of the same transaction. So we do a dividend policy to shareholders between 60%. That is our sweet spot. But sometimes we go higher, sometimes we go lower. We've also had 40%. That dividend then is to be able to say we need to recognize and give regard to shareholders. When we want capital for investment, we get capital investment from the group. And we have not had a question where we've asked for capital from the group and it never arrived. So the view that we hold, remember we come from a very strong parent, is Africa's largest financial institutions today. We never had a constraint that we need to make an investment. So I'd like you to be very clear. The view that local institutions have and said, I have to hold my dividends because I need to make an investment, we don't have that. It's not a constraint for Stanbic Holdings at all. So we run the dividend rail to the shareholders, and if you want to make an investment tomorrow, we manage to get the investment background. And the group has many options to make investments. Remember, RAM is not just in one market. So we look at those. I like it to be seen as two different decisions that are running. And I cannot answer. I mean, I saw the media reporting about another bank. We don't comment on speculation on the media.
Iran steps up fuel supply attacks. Oil reserves released as global energy crisis looms.
Hello to you from Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates, right on the front line of the economic war in the Middle East conflict. Today, 32 countries, including the UK, all members of the International Energy Agency, approved the largest release of oil reserves in history. 400 million barrels of oil will be made available to curb rising prices caused by the US and Israel's war with Iran. Now, it comes after attacks on shipping in and close to the Strait of Hormuz, with Iran warning that any vessel linked to its enemies will be hit. Donald Trump, however, says the oil prices are a matter of war and will come down. Well, the narrow strait, running just off the coast, not far from our position here, is usually one of the busiest shipping lanes on the planet. 20% of the world's oil goes through the strait. But now it's paralyzed, with just a handful of vessels sailing. Events this morning explain why. Three ships were hit in separate strikes, powerful blows to the global economy. Tonight, we'll hear from Sarah Smith, who's traveling with Donald Trump and voters in Kentucky and from inside Iran. But first, I've been taking a look at some of the challenges now facing the ships trying to sail.
Damaged, but still afloat. A cargo ship bears the scars of an Iranian attack in the Strait of Hormuz. The crew escaped with their lives. It's a powerful reminder that the economic war in this conflict could be just as significant as the military campaign. The narrow Hormuz waterway is a vital artery for global commerce. But look at this. Off in the distance, a traffic jam of gas and bulk carriers, oil tankers, ships from across the globe, anchored and unable to reach their markets because of the threat of attack.
And with that, we have officially come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Reading News Analysis. Please do stay tuned for the Onkona Ndenge program brought to you by Matthias Hangara and the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30, the Business Economic segment with David Shambe. From Indafa, happy as usual. It is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place.